Hi, I'm Yvonne Zinder, and my body is that of a woman read as white, mother of three children, heteronormative, mid-30s. It is privileged because it is healthy and white, and it works. It's highly political, it's performative, and it was from the very moment, as the midwife told my mother, it's a girl. From this moment, the program began, in which my achievements and deficits were subjugated to my gender. Girls are good at languages and bad at logical thinking. They're socially competent and solve conflicts faster. In the first years, my body was almost untouched by the longing to improve. It was initially institutionalized, and everybody waited to see what would come out of it. Once I entered into puberty, I chose myself to become a cyborg. I used titanium containing sun cream to not get brown. I used the anti-baby pill to be free of contraception problems, even though the price was that my cycle become incredibly well predicted, or rather predictable. And I started to organize my free time using social media, and in exchange gave my data at the price of being constantly informed. I expanded my body through a mobile phone, learned more, and became smart. I optimized my exterior. My telephone taught me how to become more and more efficient. I augmented the symbiotic pair relationship with the father of my children with a shared Google Calendar and an app called Bring, so that we could coordinate our shopping. Family management thus became a job at which you could see that I had responsibility for its failure or success. The new tools suggested that you could get there if only you tried hard enough. Have you checked your app? We need kale for my smoothie. I just sent you a reminder by Telegram. My pregnancy was measured and monitored, pathologized and romanticized. Hardly anybody knew more about pregnancy than I did, what I should eat, what it was going to be based on the shape of my tummy, and what the probability was that my child would have a disability. My body was public. I wondered how Jennifer Lynn Marrone would deal with the pregnancy, because she is selling all of her data since, and has been since 2015, as an artwork. So what about the data of her unborn child? Can she define what happens to the data of this baby? Is this baby's data worth more? Does the value of this data increase or decrease if the child has a number of ethnicities? What if it has a disability? Anisha and myself have decided to stay very much within our techno bodies and privileges, our experiences with body enhancements, their options and conflicts. But we are going to look at the extent to which these role models can be transferred.
Image description. Okay. Indigenous sites, totems, and a glowing pyramid with text across the image reading, "Just because white people couldn't do it doesn't mean it was aliens." By Decolonial Meme Queens. Decolonial Meme Queens. Last month, I gave a talk on a panel organized by Opashona Ghosh, called Femme New World. I spoke with her alongside three other femme of color artists, including Maisa Lihedeb, and Erkan Afan. We spoke about our art, our queerness, and our various identities and experiences as people of color in Berlin. We also spoke about whiteness, queer whiteness, spicy whiteness, institutional whiteness. It was the first time I've spoken on a panel with only people of color and only femmes. There was this unspoken understanding between us where we didn't have to shield ourselves from invasive questions or tokenistic panel photographs. But afterwards, something happened. As people came to congratulate us on the talk, a group of four presumably white Europeans came to ask some questions and began to thank me for the information that we had given, how I in particular had helped them understand some things and tips that they were going to use for their future work. One German guy came and was very excited to tell me whether I was interested in doing a collaboration with him. He had a new yoga class idea, and to be specific, a yoga class that is accessible for queer people. image description, meme of a group of white people doing a yoga class with the headline saying, "Yoga doesn't see color." Underneath, South Asian yoga instructor looks for a job in a yoga studio. I'm sorry, our slots for yoga, if authentic yoga teachers are full up at the moment. Namaste. Should I ask him why he is asking me about yoga, a diasporic, part Indian woman of color who showed absolutely no interest in doing this ancient practice? Should I tell him yoga had been so deeply appropriated, so far removed from its context, that I actually feel I have no opinion on it anymore? Should I tell him that his yoga is a white corporation where skinny white women in Fabletics gym clothes say Om and other marketing tool for gym industries that profit from whitewashing, fat shaming, and cultural appropriation? Should I tell him that yoga was queer long before Europeans even knew what queer was? Should I wonder what makes him think I'm willing to do this emotional labor and give him knowledge that ultimately he could find on Google? I chose the first meme by Decolonial Meme Queens, Decolonial Meme Queens, because it presents the limits of a white Western conceptualization of the world. It is a synonym for entitlement and the ingrained presumption that progression and developments can only come from whiteness and the West. The development of bodies falls into the same rhetoric. To think about our bodies literally becoming a cyborg, it would seem first that we must be read as human. But in the eyes of the law, who is human? The Universal Declaration of Human Rights is a piece of legislation with the aim of asserting all humans and all bodies as deserving of basic human rights. It began historically in the debate of the rights of man that initiated in France during its active colonial period. So, in other words, the discussion of human rights began during the mass destruction, genocide, and pillaging of colonial territories. The delineation of who is human and who is not is a racialized one, and it constitutes the declaration today. It is a facade built on a system of oppression written by white men to uphold imperial power. In the name of human rights, the invasion and destruction of many countries and lives has been justified. And to tattoo this on your body is to permanently underline in ink that it only stands for some bodies. In the Western context we live in, whiteness is human, being healthy is human, is able-bodied, is cis, is male, is normal. I've done body work for 5 years now, and it's been with this physical work that I've understood the gravity of being connected to our own body, and also the systems that wish to dislocate us from them. I worked in the gym industry as an instructor, teaching legs, bums, and tums, Zumba, you name it. Do this squat to tone your butt and work hard to get ready for summer. I was to promote the after image of you, the real you, the one that awaits you after the class. This type of enhancement is so ingrained in our self-image, the health and fitness industry actually no longer remains in the gym. It follows us home. Calorie count calculators and Fitbits attached to our sides. Image description, a smartphone with an app reading "Better Me" and three slim white women with a text, "Ultimate Meal Plan and Workouts App." Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it is unfeminist to want to change your body. It's yours, do what you want. But the society that makes you feel inadequate in its before state is something that I think we should question. So at a certain point, I was sick of these abs workout classes where also people never believed that I was the instructor. So I turned to teaching less overtly weight loss oriented classes. And there I found an alternative narrative. This time the talk was of shaping up with an additional element of self-care and wellness. Weight loss is out and body positivity is in. In this context, altering your body through surgery, through steroids, or through implants is regarded as dangerous and tacky. You should be slim, but always through natural means. In the way capitalist corporations function, the rhetoric had adapted to suit the latest trend in the market. Body positivity and self-care, on the surface, encourage us to be kind to our bodies, but ultimately are the product of classist and fatphobic strategies to gain capital. As Sophie Hagen says, body positivity skinny washes the fat liberation movement. It is more palatable to a mass market where it's all about everyone loving their bodies, regardless of what they look like. Of course, we should love our bodies and own them. And yes, we can celebrate a turn in representation, but this does not take away from the structural discrimination that bodies who do not represent the norm experience. As Hagen says, no matter how much she loves her body, she will be discriminated due to fat phobia. Self-care, the accomplice to body positivity, can represent a means to buy your way to calmness. Type self-care into Instagram GIFs and we see face masks, nail polish, bubble baths, all femme-centered activities that have to be bought to achieve a better, calmer you. Yoga and meditation, too, have been pulled into this market. Image description, another group of white people doing yoga with a text reading, please can you stop making memes attacking white people about the appropriation of Indian culture? It's really ruining my chakra alignment. Enhancement is not just physical, but now spiritual. But did you know that yoga instructors can earn up to 3 times more than other gym instructors? How much does a gym membership or spa visit cost? Have you ever had a South Asian yoga instructor? If the whitewashed wellness world can lift you to a higher level of health and happiness, it certainly comes at a price.
Thank you.
Mein Körper ist politisch. Er ist Schauplatz von Interessen.
My body is political. It is the arena of interest. It is capital. As a mother, I have to ensure I have fuckability. This factor that expresses my sexual erotic capital is based on a male view that I have incorporated too, though. Many women in the wake of technological inspired emancipation wave 4.0 try to regain a positive attitude to their own body. Take back postpartum is a movement, or the Honest Body Project is another. Anisha just described the trends in the fitness world aiming at losing weight, aspiring to wellness, body positivity, mindfulness, and all of the problematic implications of the non-Western teaching, despite the unintended colonial appropriation of yoga. I also relax and love my body positively with yoga. All the same, most of society encounters my body in an aggressive way. A neighbor told me, unsolicited recently, that he had comfort for me that he thought I needed after 3 children. He said, be pleased. After the 3rd child, God installs a zipper in me. When I said what he meant by that, and whether he really was prepared to start talking about my vagina without solicitation, he said, well, it's just a saying. A friend came into the swimming pool and talked to me and said how unfair it is that I'm so thin again. He said, I looked as if I hadn't had a single child instead of 3 children. And as if this was an incredibly positive act of achievement. The way I deal with my body becomes even more strained when I actively devote myself to fuckability. Since the father of my children and myself are separated, I sometimes date. Algorithms are the factors that predict or that promise predictability and self-determination in the search for sex and love. The most common thing I seem to hear there is the question, are all 3 children from the same man? My female body and its offspring become a battle place of class conflicts and well-hidden prejudices. It is a problem, though. I haven't closed the zipper tightly enough. promiscuity is something I'm accused of. I have to be careful. I have recently optimized my dating profile, like my CV. I delete the fact that I'm a mother. I require aids, help, even though I'm not restricted according to most criteria. I correspond physically and emotionally to the standard. I'm a high performer. But without WhatsApp, without being connected, without 24/7 online shopping and researching the most complicated subjects from ever, my highly performative everyday life would not succeed, and certainly not my difficult jobs. I notice again and again that I'm getting angry because I can't, or when I can't track things, when Google can't help me. One of my children disappeared at dusk in the park, and I had to look for him completely analog. The rising panic, a biochemical reaction, was one I couldn't suppress. Siri, where's my child?
Image description. Image of a quote by Mia Mingus. Mia Mingus, reading, ableism is connected to all of our struggles because it undergirds notions of whose bodies are considered valuable, desirable, and disposable. From how our communities can move beyond access to wholeness. Text in is black and white against an abstract, colorful background. I began getting nail extensions about a year ago. And if anyone who's ever had acrylics knows, once you start, you really can't stop. So every time I got my refills done, the length of my nails got longer and longer and more elaborate. I adapted the way I used my phone, typing at the speed of light with a loud clacking noise. Typing on the computer was far more enjoyable, perhaps not for my colleagues, but. And it became a part of my outfit. It became part of my jokes, my mannerisms, how I moved. And much as many people thought these long acrylics would make life more difficult, I found many things easier, and most importantly, I was the one who loved them. When I was single, people complimented me on the glitter, the cute colors. To the onlookers, it fitted. I present as feminine and girly, so yes, of course I have long fake nails, and I continue to happily wear these nails. But when I got into a relationship, the comments changed. In social situations, time and time again, I was asked, how do you, you know, with those nails? At this point, I stopped to wonder, what would a cishet man married to a woman answer if an acquaintance asked how exactly he had sex with his wife? Being in a relationship with a woman and having long acrylic nails blurred the boundaries for people for what is and what isn't appropriate to ask someone about their personal life. As a femme and female-presenting person, being asked invasive personal questions is nothing new. But for me, it was a surprise that these comments often came from queer people, and queer femmes in particular. Are we so constrained by a heteronormative vision of sex and sexuality, we can still only conceive of one form of sex with a male and female counterpart? Are all feminine women heterosexual and ultimately passive? It became clear to me after these moments of embarrassment at being invaded so personally that the comments were not only homophobic, but femphobic and sexist. Meme with a brightly colored queer dog wearing glasses saying, queerness is about breaking stereotypes, not letting anyone tell you how you should look, and about being your true amazing self. Picture of a dog with glasses and lots of question marks. Sees a queer femme with long acrylic nails. What? It would seem there is only one way to look and act queer and be a woman. A straight white woman is glamorous with her acrylic nails. A black or brown woman with long nails is ghetto. And a queer lesbian or lesbian woman with long nails doesn't exist. It's clear that desirability functions as part of a system of hierarchies, all connected to the white male gaze. So for me, acrylic nails became not just an extension of my body, but also as a queer femme to resist and exist. The narrative we learn when bodies are invaded in this way is that they should be perceived to not have or not deserve boundaries, where their own bodies do not really belong to them. It perpetuates what bodies should and shouldn't do, what they should and shouldn't look like. As Mia Mingus explains, this is a foundational aspect of ableism, the structural discrimination of sick and disabled people. In this framework, the concept of health has been used to justify discrimination, facilitating violence of bodies that do not fit the norm. The typically medicalized words like healing, curing, improving, imply that the body from the outset is in the opposite condition and in need of fixing. I'm going to give a trigger warning now of some images with headlines from online news resources that give evidence to the following statements. They are transphobic, homophobic, misogynoir, and fatphobic. So a consequence of these ableist structures is that they pave the way for queer and trans people to be put into therapy. For black women to be denied life-threatening medical procedures. And for fat people to be spoken about as an epidemic that needs to be eradicated.
Prosthetics is based on one disaster and two milestones. The First World War and increasingly gruesome weapons caused more mutilations to people. Antibiotics and anesthetics made it possible at the same time to survive gruesome anesthetic injuries. Prosthetic was initially intended to make the war disabled whole again, and of course there would otherwise be a blight on the cityscape. Medical progress then created first mechanical body extensions, primarily for war-disabled men. And then these visionaries hoped to achieve more with these enhancements. In utopia, cyborgs appeared, and later transhumanists. But as Anisha has already put it, in order to overcome being humans by means of technology in the transhumanistic sense, first of all, we need to perceive all people as equal. In order to overcome borders in your thinking, first of all, you have to recognize them, to know they're there. In cyborg and robot human fantasies, the white male gaze becomes very clearly visible. Fritz Lang's Mariah, Blade Runner's Pris, Samantha in Her, female AI is ultimately nothing but the object of desire of the protagonist. These fantasies are obviously and primarily about control. A machine has no will of its own. It follows instructions, and when in doubt, you can destroy it without having to have destroyed a human life. And certainly, machines can be owned. Best case, they can be created just the way we want them. Very like the Pygmalion in the primeval myths of the histories of the male creator. Donna Haraway in 1985 wrote an essay, Manifesto for Cyborgs, where she said, a cyborg is an imaginary figure and a living experience changes what one should consider the experience of women in the late 20th century. And we all know that technology still has very much a female connotation. Siri, TomTom, and Alexa address us with a female voice. But how could technology serve the female body without continuing to standardize it, optimize it, make it measurable, comparable, healthier in the logic of the normative Western image of the body?
I'm not a scientist nor a medical engineer, but when it comes to bodies, I've had enough of policing. The intrinsic necessity to people to discuss bodies, so often based on appearance, becomes a form of entitlement. To make judgments based on appearance is inextricable from the social conditions that foreground them. Health, from the beginning, has been weaponized by those in positions of power. So I ask, what does it really mean to be optimized or enhanced? Who can be optimized? And what is at stake for the body's pre, anti, and post-optimization? It also makes me wonder, how would the world have looked had we dedicated our research, our thoughts, and opinions on our own bodies instead of others? Thank you.